Survivor's Guide to True Crime includes discussions of sexually based violence and is not intended for children. Information provided should not be used as a substitute for professional medical or legal advice. Please exercise discretion and self-care.
Welcome back to Survivor's Guide to True Crime. I'm Kara.
And I'm Kim. Thanks for joining us. We wanted to do something a little different than we have been doing, where we sort of play catch up.
Realistically, we know that a lot of the reason that you're going to be here is because of us, because of our friendship. And we want to just open up the episodes with a little bit of that, updates on what's going on in our lives. Obviously, if you follow us on social, you can keep up with us in a timely manner. But we want to integrate it into the podcast just so you guys can get to know us a little bit more.
As we're the two best friends that anyone could have.
But really, I mean, we're fun, we're cool, and we think you guys might like us.
Maybe. Seems like us. Let's start first with Kara's big movie launch. Tell us a little bit about how that all went down in that week.
It was a lot. It felt a little bit like drinking from a fire hose, to be honest. We were launching the podcast. I was doing press and the movie was coming out and I had responsibilities for the movie and it was very overwhelming, but it was just kind of like put one foot in front of the other and make it through. So we were trying to launch the podcast in conjunction with the movie for obvious reasons. The more we can just kind of have all of that come together at the same time is the better for podcast. And so I had to go to New York for press and that was just like an extravaganza. It was amazing. I had some amazing opportunities and then caught you in the airport, scooped you onto my plane, just put you in my little bag.
That was planned, by the way. I was speaking at a conference in Atlanta and got done just in time to be like, ooh, I'm going to hop over to Kara's home airport. And oh, by the way, she's coming in from New York. So she connected in Atlanta. We flew back together and held hands and skipped all the way up to her front door.
Yeah. So she came for the weekend for the movie premiere and my husband leading up to the movie, he was like, I think we should have a big watch party with a lot of our friends here. And I said, sounds great, but I literally cannot contain the information. My brain is it's like an overflowing box,
one thing at a time.
So he said, okay, no problem. I'll plan it. And he and Kim tried to plan her coming here as a surprise, but it turns out they're the worst at surprise.
It did not go well.
They kept that surprise for like less than a day. I think they both told me individually within like an hour of one another. It's like, so listen.
So sorry, but
I was supposed to be a surprise, but
it worked out way better not being a surprise though, because then we could actually plan some things to do while I was there. And it was for as much stuff as we were both accomplishing in that time and how big the premiere was and everything that you were doing, it was still like we got to just exist. And just be in that space. And it was so, so nice. And for me, very relaxing. I haven't had just time to myself like that. And I don't know when.
Isn't it amazing? That's what I love about traveling for work. I always try to squeeze those opportunities in. So my husband planned a big watch party with a lot of the people that we are closest to. Kim got to be there, which was like a lifesaver because she was kind of like my media coordinator during it. And she
loved it.
Like,
not gonna lie.
And knew what I needed for like the social and for the recovery, which, you know, again, we always point back to our reason for starting this podcast and having someone who understands what you need without you having to say it in these kind of situations is, you know, you can't understate the importance of it. So did that and then just had a big old vulnerability hangover because as it turns out, sitting in a room full of the people that you are closest to in the world and seeing them experience your biggest trauma is heavy for a lot of people.
I found it interesting too, maybe because, you know, you sent it to me, I pre-screened it. We've talked about it since it was just an idea. And I mean, it was one thing to see all of your friends and family experience that in real time. But then there's the two of us sitting on the couch completely just like, let's make our humor. And we're following along like with the hashtag and trying to answer people in real time. And everyone else is like breaking down and crying. And meanwhile, Kara and I are over here like, la, la, la.
And we're like, I think it's so funny how our personalities and our job overflowed into that moment too, because it's like first part of the movie before commercial break was long, right? And it was heavy, and then the commercial comes on and we look around and everyone's just like,
what's more cheese?
Yeah. Here's a dog. Would you like the petter? But I found it interesting how we're like, okay, how's everybody feeling? Like, yeah. Let us use some coping mechanisms, because turns out them receiving that was like a trauma for them as well.
Kara said a few words before the movie started, much to her chagrin. And one of the nicest things that I think you pointed out too was that, hey, we've already lived through this and processed it. Kim and I are here if you need basically victim, like, I don't know about you. I snapped into like victim advocate mode, and it's a switch for me. And I don't know if it is for you too, where you and I can just kind of bleh and just be. But then The minute someone is either in distress or trying to work through something, it is just like a switch in my brain, at least, where I'm like, okay, all of my experience and things, they all go to the back. And I'm just here present in the moment from a place of empathy, and I can help you process. It doesn't have to be about me.
Yeah, totally. I think that we just kind of automatically switch into that space. And that is a function of our previous careers, as well as what we're doing now, and like the outreach that we do on a very real level. So it was really cool. It was definitely something that was uncomfortable for me in a lot of ways, to sit there with everyone and have to like look everybody in the eyes and be like, hi, you just experienced what I experienced. How you feeling? Right. But I think all in all, it was enjoyable. And then we have, you know, this moment the next day where we're like, oh, we need to get some photos together, we need to get content, like we need to do these things. And
yeah, it was self-imposed pressure. We're together, we never get to be together, we have all these things that we should probably be doing, probably.
Yeah. And yet what did we do?
Kara came to where I was staying and walked in, and we're both like semi-dressed, but just want to do nothing and watch a rom-com and stare at the ceiling and drool on ourselves.
Yup.
I don't really feel like doing anything. Can we just not? So that was nice. You know, if you share your story and you the next day feel like just not doing anything, know that that is normal. Even for those of us who do this over and over and over again, that's the way it is. And then,
yeah, you've got to have some time to process, to dump that trauma bucket. As Kara says so eloquently in the first episode, you feel like a bag of ass.
You know, I'm really good with words, as it turns out. And then the next day I had to drive Kim to the airport, and in one of my favorite places, Charleston. And so it was kind of cool. I had therapy. It was my first post EMDR session with my therapist, which if you guys want to hear more about EMDR, we both have EMDR experiences. We'll be happy to talk about that in another episode where we have more time. But went and had therapy and was driving around in my car that I love. It's new to me, and with one of my favorite people who is like safe. And it was just kind of like the perfect recovery and reset for my nervous system, because, you know, when you consume these stories or you retell your story, you reactivate your nervous system. And so you can kind of get lodged back in that fight or flight. So sometimes you need to reset your nervous system to remind you that you're safe and you're well, and then you survived and you can do this. And so it was kind of like a perfect little reset for my nervous system. So it was great.
Driving through after being in the rain. And I mean, even though it's so much surrounding of compassion and love and care, it's still okay to, I need time for myself to process. And I feel like I can process just as well by myself as I can with you. And That is probably a rare thing to find. Most people may have like one, maybe two people that they can do that with and just be ugly self, where you are just experiencing that vulnerability hangover, and it would not matter if they were in the room or not. Mm-hmm. But it's nice to just be your full, whole authentic self, ugly parts and all.
Yeah. Have a safe person.
Yeah. Yeah. Not everyone has that.
Yeah. And I think that's the definition of like a safe person that you can truly be unguarded with. And so, as always, These relationships are the basis for what we want to form here with our followers. So speaking of followers and what we want to form.
Yes.
What do we need from them, Kimberly?
Oh my gosh. If you're listening right now, you can help. Actually, really, what we need right now the most is for you to go into wherever you're listening to this podcast right now, leave a rating, leave a review. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do. We would love any and all feedback. And Karen and I are going to be infusing some Q&A episodes as we move through this season. We found very quickly a lot of people have questions. They're really good questions, and we want to be able to present you with some of those answers in a way that you can digest all at the same time or in pieces. So if you have questions of Kara, me, any of our guests, please, please submit those by email. And we've got an email address. It's hello@survivorsguidetotruecrime.com. But we'll put those into a Q&A episode, which will be forthcoming. And that way we can interact a little bit more with you all.
Yeah, we will probably also intersperse some topics that we also want to talk about that we think are important. And within reason, we can reach back out to a lot of our guests because we do have relationships with most of these people. Mm-hmm. Something that's sort of forming and we're figuring out what it looks like is this idea of a survivor-led, public-facing community, these amazing individuals that we really have formed relationships with. Mm-hmm. I hope that it is obvious when you listen to these interviews that we actually do have relationships with these people based on what we have all experienced. So within reason, we can reach back out to a lot of these people. If you have specific questions about something they said, we can pass that along. But we're super excited. And ultimately, by you guys going and doing things like sharing, reviewing, rating, subscribing, that just helps us to get in front of more people. And the purpose for that is just for us to help more people. The more people get their ears filled with these words, the more hearts, minds, and souls we can change. And so that's our ultimate goal.
That being said, we are thrilled to introduce you to today's guest. Barrett, I actually first started connecting with online of all places, and this conversation,
it could have gone on for like 18 hours.
And I mean, it kind of did because we had to stop recording and then it's like, and now we'll move to a group message. And it is just so lovely. He's a wonderful human through and through, as genuine as he seems online. And I'm just so excited to present this to everyone.
I actually leave every single interaction with Barrett and I'm like, I just love him so much. And you guys are going to love him too. If you don't already know him, you probably do. But if you don't already know him, can't wait for you guys to meet Barrett.
Barrett Paul is a life coach, activist, and digital creator who reaches over 2.3 million people across all his social platforms.
Throughout his humanitarian work, he has traveled to all 7 continents, which led to him being profiled by the UN at the UNGA in 2019.
In 2016, Paul hiked 800 miles on the PCT, and since then, his mission is to fully lean into helping the world heal.
Barrett welcomes you to join his love army, where together our purpose is to empower, educate, and inspire as many humans as possible.
Thank you so much for joining us. I have followed your work for a long time, and I'm so excited to bring your voice and your words to our listeners today. All right, Barrett, take it away. You've been summoned.
Thank you for having me, Kim and Kara. I am Barrett Paul. I am a professional Jewish queer life coach. I've been doing this work for 8 years, and my activism and advocacy kind of spans across everything, but I have been a very big advocate within the queer space and then also the survivor space because I myself am a survivor.
Great. To your comfort level, of course, tell us a little bit about your background with that.
Unfortunately, it's more than I think I have even processed still. I was a professional model from the ages of 19 to 29. And the first time that I was sexually assaulted was on the very first photo shoot that I ever was a part of in the industry when I was 19 years old. And then throughout my time in the industry, so those 10 years, there was a lot of different assaults, harassments, just different things that I'm still processing today. And while that may sound heavy to some, I'm grateful that I'm able to be in a space that is healing and processing in a way that can also help others heal and process.
So you do a lot of life coaching. Tell us about that aspect, because just as we were warming up and getting to know each other before we started recording, you already dropped some excellent truth bombs and I loved it. So tell us a little bit about life coaching and how you got into that.
Yeah, so I got into life coaching when I went through my quarter life crisis. It was when I was leaving the industry the first time. I had moved to LA after going to NYU to pursue an acting career, and modeling had already started while I was in university. So I was still modeling as well. And again, because of the industry and the things that I was going through and the predatory experiences that were pretty constant for me, I was like, I just can't be a part of this industry anymore. I mean, my final straw was being told that I need to go to straight acting class to become straighter. And I was like, you're all queer and you're telling me to do this. This makes no sense. I don't talk about this a lot, but it's something that I'm, again, happy to talk about because I think it's important. And through that, I went through my quarter life crisis, moved from LA back to New York. I was like, I don't know what the fuck I want to do. And so I kind of took one of the things I had been passionate and interested in. I was a swimmer competitively for 15 years. And so I was like, I'm going to go into fitness and just see what happens. And I got into physical fitness and working with clients privately for some people who live in, you know, New York City or LA. I know they're all over the world now. I used to be a trainer at Barry's Bootcamp. And after getting my first client privately, I realized that everyone I was working with, that first person and everyone after, was just really looking to like talk through things as well. And I've always loved communicating, talking, helping. I mean, my degree is in communication, culture, and media, so it was a pretty natural fit. And then in 2014, I got certified in behavioral change, and then slowly but surely really found my way to being the life coach that I am today. And it is one of the greatest gifts. I love to paraphrase Gloria Steinem, and that's, you know, the final stage of healing is helping others heal through what you've been through. And yeah, I really love what I get to do on a daily basis.
Kara, tap in, because I think that just hit all your buttons. Yeah. So I did life coaching for a while as well. And I feel like I've kind of taken it over to what I'm doing now, which is really just working with people one-on-one. And that exactly what you said, it's helping people to heal through what you went through. And I find that to be so healing for yourself in a lot of ways. There's something very amazing within, I mean, it's like in your soul when you're able to take someone who is where you once were and you're like, man, I was there. And let me tell you that it does get better, that it's not always easy, right? Like, it sucks sometimes, right? To pull yourself up and do the hard work, but to be able, right? Like, because as Kim and I say to each other all the time, it's like, we can do hard things, but sometimes we don't want to, right? Like, we might cry about it a little, but we can do it. Right. So I have found that it's incredibly healing for me to help others. Is that something that you would say has been a big part of your actual healing journey to help others?
Absolutely. I mean, the final piece to that quote is, and that is the final stage of healing. Like getting to help other people heal in the same way is the final bit of healing. And one of the things that I love to let people know in my life coaching work and in general is that the three things that they have scientifically proven, you know, Yale, Harvard, all these big universities have done these studies to find true peace of mind is altruism. So how are you giving back? Community, what are you, you know, what communities you're a part of? How do you give back to those communities? And then gratitude. So if you can find those three things every day in some way, you're going to find peace of mind. It may not be constant. It may not be all the time, but that is like what I think we should all be working towards.
I love that. I love that you just like gave people a goal, like this, yes, this, and this. These are the three things to kind of work towards for peace. I love that.
And they're scientifically backed. It's not just regurgitated stuff. There is real purpose and meaning to those tangible things that you can do on your own every single day. Have you all heard of the term wounded healer?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So the first time my therapist brought this up to me, it was this huge watershed moment, because I didn't realize that, why am I want to help. I feel better about myself when I'm helping others. And they don't have to know anything about what I've gone through. But if I can provide them just with a little bit of validation or help or direction, I feel better. And when she introduced that concept of a wounded healer, it made so much sense to me. And I feel like that's what I'm hearing with you, and connecting physical movement and fitness to this higher state of operating and vibrancy.
100%. Yes. And like, now I don't do any of the physical fitness work with my clients. That's something I can like, you know, coach them to go and find or assist a little bit, but it really is those like sit down deep conversations. And the big one for me is, and I've had this for a long time, my mom was very sick when I was young, and that really shifted my way of thinking. I was very sensitive. I've always been very sensitive. I'm a Pisces, if you're into that stuff. But, you know, it's empathy. And I think being able to work with people and put yourself in their shoes, and when you've been through what they've actually been through in some way, it's like an even greater sense of it. And you see yourself healing with them even more. And I say that to all of my clients, that like, I'm learning, I'm healing just as much in these sessions with you as well. So thank you for being here with me.
What a true kind of vulnerability too. Oh, I love it. Okay. So I don't even know what direction to go to. So let's start here. I first came across you on TikTok dragging the crap out of some god-awful misogynistic piece of crap. And it was like the most glorious thing to witness and watch. And so I started poking through more and more of your videos. And I'm like, yes, yes. All of the stuff that you are just laying out plainly in an educational manner when you have people spewing whatever they want on the internet, because internet is so validating, I think, to me as a woman, but just in general, when you see all of this normalized in conversations, in media, in industries, in workplaces, that to have someone sit down, pause the crap in the background and say, here's what this person is actually saying. And Kara, correct me if I'm wrong on your side, but I think I speak for both of us. It's nice seeing a male figure stand up and say something, because if we say it, we're shrill and we get labeled with all of these other titles. But when a fellow male does it, then they're more inclined to listen. Is that what you found? What brought you to this amazing voice on TikTok and your social media platforms?
You know, I'm really grateful and humbled to hear that, like almost to the point where I could like cry a little. I shared this kind of in the beginning of my journey, but like women have always been my safe space. I was not welcomed into male spaces growing up. I was very much bullied and picked on, and women have always just been my friends. And so I joke, I was raised by women. Like I have a dad and a mom and like brother and a sister, but like my best friends have always been, you know, when I was young girls, now as I'm older women, and I've listened and I've been with them in sacred spaces where other men are not invited. I've had sleepovers with more girls than I ever had with boys, you know, from like a friendly, cute standpoint. And getting to be in those spaces and see how similar men and women are, I think is really important. You know, like little boys burp and fart, little girls burp and fart. Like that's, I think, important for everyone to understand. Like we're not that different first and foremost, which is also why I don't understand why there's so much hate. Well, I understand it, but why I continue to push through and be like, there doesn't need to be this hate from men to women. They're not the person that you should be directing this anger at. But the way that it happened, and I was really nervous when it happened on TikTok, because I've been public in a very big way since I was 19 with my modeling career. And then a lot of the gay community knew me because I was, you know, my content was kind of targeted to try and help our community with a lot of gaslighting from a lot of gay men, because gay men still act very similar to straight men when it comes to these bad behaviors. And I don't think we talk about that enough. But the thing on TikTok, I just remember seeing like a lot of really awful dudes and being like, why? Like what, like, how is this content? And no one really saying anything that looked like me. And I was like, I'm going to just say something. Like, this is bullshit. There's no reason for this. And then it kind of just started to like take off. And I was like, okay. And I really didn't want to take away space from women in this movement, because I'm aware that I'm not a woman and that I have a different lived experience. But I have been through a lot of the same gaslighting, sexual abuse as women. And so there's like a deep level of empathy and understanding that I do have that I don't think a lot of men have, which I wish they had, because it very quickly makes you go, well, we're all humans. Mm-hmm. And the same thing kind of happened when I came forward with my assaults, my abuse, the first time during the Me Too movement. And I just was like, I don't want to take a space away from women, but I know that this needs to happen, and I can't act like an advocate if I'm not advocating for myself as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can only speak on my own behalf, but when I see your videos and you speaking up, it doesn't feel like you're taking space away. It's almost honoring the space that we already have on our own and saying it in a language that many of the men who should be listening wouldn't otherwise understand. So thank you for that work that you do. And Kara and I are huge fans of dark humor through and through. It's why we survive and do the things that we do. But I think that there's something really disarming and helpful about the fact that you do infuse humor in these spaces. So there's a difference in your videos. Some of them have calls to action specifically surrounding maybe the topic that you're addressing. And other ones are just meant, I think, to give the language to other women to say, this is BS. How do you go into those? What's your creative mindset? What are you thinking through in that process?
Well, the first thing I want to say is I never want to feel like I'm speaking for anyone. I really do feel like I'm speaking with. I don't look at myself as like standing in front of. I am shoulder to shoulder with every single person that is doing this work, that is a survivor, that it wants to see this world better. I call my community the Love Army, and I don't say I'm the leader of it. It is not mine. It is ours, you know?
Yes.
And when it comes to my content, I realized I needed to have more fun and humor because, to be quite frank, like, I found myself just getting angry, and I'm not an angry person in real life. Like, my friends called me a golden retriever, and it's like, why would I want to show up so angry online? Like, I want to be me all the time. And yeah. So it took a little bit of looking and seeing myself the way other people maybe see me and go, whoa, like, I'm maybe not being who I really am and who I want to put out there. And so the comedy kind of came where I was just like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, how is this what you are saying? And like, it's very organic for me. Like, I'm really goofy in real life. I am constantly making people laugh. I love to laugh. I love being silly. I think it's a big, big, important piece to healing your inner child. And if you're not able to laugh through the pain just also becomes like darker and harder a lot of the time. And that doesn't mean you should be laughing at it all the time or majority of the time, but you need moments of lightness to just break and take a breath. And I'm really grateful that people have watched my content and been able to laugh, because the stuff that I'm presenting is not funny. I mean, it's the opposite of funny to me. And I don't plan. I get tagged in so much stuff. And like, the running joke now is like, I get summoned. And like, literally it says like,
yes.
Like, I'm like, I've been summoned, because like, literally when I'm tagged, it's like, you've been summoned. Like, people write, you're summoned. And so like, yes. Okay, like, I feel like I'm some weird I Dream of Jeannie experience.
Thank you for joining us, Barrett. You've been summoned.
I love it. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So for me, when it comes to it, it's just like this. I really want people to understand this is not content for me. I'm going to get emotional again. Like, this is real. This is like, yeah. My best friends are women. Every single one of them has had some sort of awful experience with a man. I have had many awful experiences with men and some women, but it is the root of patriarchy that men continue to hold this over everyone. And that is why like internalized misogyny does exist, and why women try to act like men and become these problematic people at moments. And as a male presenting person, I know that my work has to be about really exemplifying the main common oppressor. And that is the white, able-bodied, wealthy, straight, cisgender man. Like, he is who is hurting majority of the world. It's not only him, but that is who is hurting Black men, Black women, queer men, queer women, Latin, Asian. I mean, you can go through the whole world, and like, that is the big common denominator. It's not, you know, fun for a lot of them to hear that, but that's your male fragility, not saying that I'm open to learning and doing better. And that's your problem, not ours.
Yes, yes, yes. So taking a page sort of out of your life coaching that you coached me in before our call started, let's say I would venture a guess that we don't have a ton of male listeners that would fall into that category. However, if we do, or, you know, if someone that is listening wants to send this to someone that does categorize in that category, what would be your tips, your tricks, your advice for someone who is white, male, cisgendered, straight man to support marginalized communities, to support women? What would be a drive or a call to action for them?
My first big piece to any man that identifies in that way is, one, I want to be on your team. I want to be on your team so badly. I just want you to be on your own team. You know, like, again, it gets me emotional because I know you're not doing okay too. Men's mental health is a huge problem. And when we can tie those things together and realize that none of us are okay in these broken systems that are meant to break us, then we can unite and actually fix all of our problems together. And you're not necessarily in that position of power that you want to be in because of the wealthy person, right? It really comes down to another intersection of identity that a lot of people feel like they're a part of when you're not actually a part of. I mean, we have, you know, a few oligarchs that control the world. But the other thing is to just ask maybe why you don't want to listen. Is it because you feel like you're not being heard? And what are you not being heard about? Are you actually even voicing what's harming and hurting you in your heart, in your brain, because you aren't okay also? You know, just because you have money and a woman, as they like to say, and your body's in really good shape based off of, you know, what we have deemed to be masculine and muscular, are you really okay? Are you really okay? I am really grateful that I find myself in straight cisgender spaces quite frequently. I was in a fraternity. Like, I'm not afraid of those spaces most of the time. And there's definitely times where I'm like, this doesn't feel safe. And I don't think most straight men feel safe in here either from other straight men. And it's just like when you really get to have vulnerable, open conversation with men in general, a lot of them, if they're willing to go there, will be open and honest that they're not doing so great either. And so my call to action is just remember that we're all not okay. And we do better working together to move forward. Does that make sense?
Yes, I have full body chills. That is the thing that they forget so much is that we are here and willing to connect if you are willing to step down off of the platform that no one put you in but the systems that were already created long before you were here.
Which hurt you also.
Exactly, exactly. I don't know about you, but I am feeling extra stressed and I would like to not cut my bangs this time. So how are you currently dealing with your stress?
When I realized that I was going to be reliving my trauma on a very frequent basis, I realized that maybe I needed something to increase my stress resiliency. I was lucky enough to find Cured Nutrition. I unequivocally can say it's changed my life and how I deal with stress. I know that sounds dramatic, but Cured is a brand that is high quality. They are full of CBD, adaptogens, and functional mushrooms. All three of those go into your nervous system and they actually calm your nervous system. So you feel a little bit more like a freight liner in the ocean, not getting rocked by the waves, as opposed to a rowboat getting thrown all over the place. And my favorite, Kim got to try when she was here in South Carolina, are the gummies.
I loved it. And I didn't expect them to taste so good.
They're my favorite for when you're feeling a little extra stress on top of your day. Cured Serenity Gummies have CBD, just like all of the Cured products, but they also have ashwagandha and L-theanine. Together, those three go into your system and they just give you a nice, tranquil feeling.
I'm so excited to learn more about them and try more of their products now that you've got me hooked.
Yes. And for any of our listeners who would like to try Cured, you can go to curednutrition.com. That's C-U-R-E-D, nutrition.com. And you can use code KARA10 to get 10% off your purchase today. That's KARA10, curednutrition.com. Give them a try and let us know what you think.
I think that there's so much that I've learned just from being on TikTok, which sounds weird. You know, they've got the whole campaign about I learned it on TikTok. Indigenous persons, I had no clue. I feel like I lived in such a bubble. But once there was this platform that serves you all kinds of different content that you wouldn't otherwise see in your bubble, in your community, and you start expanding and listening to these different things, it was just, holy cow, so eye-opening and makes me think through that much more inclusion every time that I speak about sexual violence, because that's where all of my thoughts tend to go. That's where my action is based. And so when we have these ideas in our head about what the world is, and we're introduced with something completely new from a stereotype or a group or something that we've never been connected with in any way, we don't want to take away from them, but we want to understand them more. Kara, I mean, you might be able to phrase this better, but what would you tell those listeners? Like, how can they get involved? Don't be scared of the word misogyny or patriarchy, because I think so many men deep breath and repel that word, and women for that matter.
I guess the question is, Kim and I are very aware of how we are using our platform to stand beside others who may have different experiences than us, may look different than us, and much in the same way that you said you stand shoulder to shoulder with people. You're not speaking for them. You want to speak with them. And so if our listeners feel like they would like to do that, we just talked about this yesterday where I did a conversation with a bunch of female sexual assault kidnapping survivors. And when I watch that back now, it's seven women sitting on a couch. And at the time, all seven of us were blonde. And I'm like, you have seven white appearing straight blonde women. And it's actually painful for me to watch now. And it's made me now I did something at the time that was very impactful and it was very powerful. However, it's made me that much more aware of all of these other communities, like Kim said, that we have been able to learn about through being involved in social media. And so if someone wants to try to advocate for people that don't have the same experiences as them, what would be some good steps that you would tell them to someplace to start?
I think the biggest one is opening your community and actively, not in a tokenizing way, but actively, at least first starting by listening to people that you want to advocate with, right? Because we don't know what we don't know. And the other big thing is in the work, right? Quote unquote, the work, you're going to make mistakes. If you're not making mistakes, you're not doing the work. And that's painful and that's uncomfortable. But perfectionism is a form of white supremacy. It is a form of holding us back from actually growing and getting better and listening and joining in community with people that don't look like us, that don't sound like us, that don't identify like us. And while that may feel scary because you haven't had exposure to different people, that is what they want. That is what the predators of the world want. They want us separate because collectively our voice is much louder and we're not a minority. We are the majority. And that's the scariest thing to anyone that is aware of how fragile their position of power is, which is the oppressor.
Mm-hmm. I know. There's going to be all the quotable quotes.
This work is really it really is my work. It is my life's purpose. It's my life passion. Like, I think it might be easy for people to just go online and be like, oh, look, here's this, you know, attractive blonde man, where it's like, this is not how I always looked. Modeling was something that I came into and was very much harmed throughout the entire thing. Like, my brain and my education were always the most important thing to me. And it's always been with the goal of getting to tell stories and stand with people. And so, like, I'm really grateful that it's coming across that way.
Barrett, I'll tell you, it does, because I hopped on your website prior to us talking today. And you have these gorgeous pictures on there, one of which I want to talk about from the UN. Mm. And the part that I was most impressed with is when I went to your qualifications section. Mm. And I see that it's not like, you get to see 60 seconds at a time on social media, and it's humorous, and you have your eye opening like, like, that's my favorite. But then you look at all these qualifications and the way that you have used your mind and your voice. Tell us about those, because I definitely want our listeners to engage with those and understand that this goes far beyond just being passionate about what we're talking about right in this moment.
Well, thank you for such like kindness in that. It always makes me feel very humbled. Humbled is like the word that I am just constantly sitting in. Because I didn't grow up with all of this just at my access. I grew up very poor. We were a victim from 4 homes. I put myself through college. And then I knew while in school that I wanted to see more of the world. I did my first protest the first week of university at NYU. And that was to end the genocide in Darfur. And then I went to Paris for a semester abroad the next year and also took part in protest in Paris. Arrêtez le génocide, sauvez la Darfour. I can't speak French. That was awful. Anyone who speaks French, I apologize for my accent, but that is stop the genocide in Darfur, because I also took part in the protest in Paris to end that as well. And then throughout my time in school, I was in the student government. I was class president of Steinhardt at NYU my junior and senior year, which helped me get to really continue the activism. And if I think back, like, I've been doing community service since I was young, but to answer your question, as I've rambled, I spent 4 years traveling the world. I went to all 7 continents, including Antarctica, where I actually turned 31. And
oh, cool.
It was amazing. It was incredible. And I had never imagined this poor kid from Long Island would ever get to go anywhere. We didn't take family vacations. I didn't leave the country until I was in college, and I did it all through a loan. And it opened my eyes and changed everything. And that's why I really encourage people to travel, because it does help you see that we are, again, so similar, not different. And when you have that firsthand experience, it changes everything. And I've been to some of the poorest places in the world to do humanitarian work, and some of the wealthiest places in the world to do my life coaching work with, you know, very high profile clients. And it's wild. I mean, I had 24 hours where I went from one of the poorest areas of Tanzania into a yacht on the south of France. And it was like a really big mind fuck, because the people in Tanzania were happier than the people in the south of France. And yeah, so after 4 years of doing this work, it all kind of culminated. I got to be profiled by the UN at the UNGA in 2019, which was like a huge, again, humbling experience. That was a dream. I'm now technically a UN partner, where I get to help amplify messaging on social media. And then I'm a part of a few other organizations that, again, are looking to actively do this work. It is in some way a part of my life every day.
I want to talk about the TikTok Diversity Council.
Okay.
Because TikTok can sound so Gen Z or for the youths, but it can also be shrouded in this idea of a secrecy or a veil. How did you come into that, and what does that work look like?
So with that work, I'm really grateful that I have, you know, a point of contact there that I was reached out to as they saw my account growing, but they also saw the hate that was coming and they wanted to be an ally to me. which I'm really grateful for because it got really intense at a few points. And it's a thing that happens for 6 months. There's a few people in it, and it's people from the actual TikTok corporate office and then people who are, you know, on the platform creating. And we sit down and we have these round tables talking about initiations, activations, different things that are coming up, ways to make the platform more inclusive and better for everyone to be a part of. And it was just a really important thing for me to get to be a part of. And you have to apply even though you're invited. And then, you know, you have an interview. Because I did really value the time that I got to be in there. My 6 months with them is done. And really, I was bummed when it was over. I was like, is there a way that I can keep doing this? Because I love this work. And for me, the most meaningful was really getting to be an advocate for other communities. I will say this till I'm blue in the face. I truly believe that Black women have it the hardest on that platform and are silenced way too often and do not get the credit that they deserve. And anytime I even use someone who I'm agreeing with, and they're a Black woman in my video, the video is suppressed in a way that the other ones aren't. And that's like a really big bummer, because who better to learn from than people who have so much intersectionality within their own identity? And I don't know, some of my biggest role models are, you know, Oprah since I was a child. I mean, she truly is a huge reason who I am today. Why I am who I am today. I'm like, who I am today. And Toni Morrison in my more adult life has really been a big educational place for me. Maya Angelou, Angela Davis. I mean, women have always been my role models. I'm kind of going off on another tangent. And please. It's interesting because do you follow Sober Side? That's the handle. I'm blanking on her real name right now. She's wonderful. Anyways, I'm just going to say there's a woman who put out a video that was like, ask any men their top three role models, and most of them go blank. And I was like, I can't name any men who are my role models. And then that's really had me thinking for like 2 weeks about how I go into that conversation and why I'm really, again, grateful that that's kind of been the direction that my life has taken, because I think it's just really made me a much kinder human.
Now I'm thinking about it too. And
I know.
Like, do you have any men that are really a role model? Not, and they can, like, not like your dad, right?
I mean, Jim Corbin's fabulous, but
that's
clearly.
Yeah. Mike Corbin. I mean, Mike Rourke Corbin. We're going to call,
do you know our sheriff calls him Mr. Corbin? Which is my maiden name.
Oh
gosh, you know, weird as that sounds, it was my husband. I mean, it continues to be, but because he does the work. Yeah.
But yeah, before you met him, was there anyone?
No. Yeah. I'm going to be thinking about this for days now too. I really don't know.
Yeah, it was a really interesting conversation a guy commented, we'll name three men now. And it was just like, way to center men again. Like, it was just typical misogyny. He didn't answer the question. He just like went right into like, triggered. These are my feelings and I'm not going to sit and reflect. That's another piece of advice I have to everyone. If something triggers you and makes you feel a certain way, sit with it for a second. Don't just react. Just like sit with it. Listening is really important to growing.
So I have a whole thought on trigger.
Okay.
And so in the vein of you like stepping out and not being afraid to put out content that could be potentially controversial, right? Because it is scary, right? You're like, people are going to come for me.
Everything today is controversial. Also, sadly, like everything, like you could be the kindest, sweetest.
Right.
Everything's going to be controversial.
I like oranges. And someone's like, oh, so you hate apples?
It's like, yes, exactly. Exactly.
False dichotomy.
I say that TikTok and social media as a whole, I think, again, we kind of go to TikTok because that's where a lot of us have our biggest platforms today. But social media as a whole has really become the antithesis to improv, which is all about like, yes, and, you know, agreeing, moving forward. It's all about no, but like, how can I argue with you just because I want to?
Amen. And the older version, Twitter.
Hashtag delete Twitter. Hashtag delete Twitter.
Okay, so I have to talk about this. So
yes, please.
You said something about triggers, and
yes.
I came across an idea in a book that I was listening to
Okay.
about this whole prevalence of trigger warnings. and how people want trigger warnings for everything all the time. And if you don't put a trigger warning about anything that could have possibly triggered someone at some point, then you are a heinous, hateful human. And so I came across this idea that exactly what you said, if you are feeling triggered, maybe that's something that you need to lean into. So I posted a video that was like, I have an idea and it might be too controversial, but what if I told you that your trigger warnings and your need for constant trigger warnings are impeding your healing? I had a lot of hate for it, I will say, but I actually had more people that were agreeing because in the same way that I saw another video recently that was a man, his partner is trans and he is cisgender, right? That's the correct term, right?
Yes.
And so, but his partner is trans. And so people were coming at him and they were asking, so were you born a woman? And he,
I know who you're talking about. You're talking about Gene. I love Gene.
Is he the one that does the voiceovers? And
yes, he's got that deep southern raspy voice.
I love them. I love them so much.
He was like, it used to piss me off really bad. And he's like, and it made me realize that I still had some healing to do because why did it piss me off? So, right. And so it made me think of this, like they're all sort of interrelated. Like if something is triggering you to the point where you can't even consume social media because you're being triggered, maybe that's something you need to heal. So if you want to talk about that, I would love this conversation.
I have, I think, the perfect antidote. And I talk about this frequently in my work as a coach with my clients is like, if something scares you, you need to run towards it, not away from it, because it's going to chase you. And you don't want to let that thing be in more control of you than you are of it. So you need to walk up to that fear. You need to open that door and you need to walk through it. And is it going to be easy always? No. Is it going to break you down? Maybe, but I look at breakdowns as breakthroughs. Yes. You know, your language is everything. If you can really say what you mean and do it from a standpoint that says, I am sitting in this present moment and the goal is to heal and find peace, then I can find ways to walk towards the thing that is triggering me and go, why? And then go, thank you, and find the gratitude in it to keep moving forward. That's not to say that I'm grateful that I was assaulted. I wish that never happened. I don't wish that on anyone. But in my own healing, I've had to find some way to make peace with it for me, not for my abuser, not to let them off the hook, not to give them any kind of, you should go on and live a wonderful life. Like, no, fuck you. I don't know.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. But I look at this now as understanding that this has all been a part of my bigger plan to help even more people and to give me even more empathy than, again, most men have, because it has not happened to them. Or at least they've not spoken about it. That's another big problem, is a lot of men don't talk about their abuse because it's happened way more frequently than we actually talk about.
Well, and statistically speaking, it's going to be younger males who are enduring that abuse, which, you know, some of the more recent statistics are saying 1 in 3, as opposed to the 1 in 6 that we've heard for so long. And a lot of them don't have the language to put with it because maybe it was another male that was a perpetrator, or it's the same age. We've seen a lot of that coming out in recent literature too. When I think about the trigger warnings, Kara, and this popped into my mind because I say this during my keynotes each time. The very first time that I publicly spoke after we got the verdict and it went to the papers and everything, the very first time that I spoke was in a group of 10 advocates at my campus who were being trained to be peer crisis responders for our assault advocacy program. I sat down at this little conference room and I basically just told them my story. I told them what I'd been through in the previous year, year and a half, and then I let them ask questions. And I knew that when one of them asked a question that I wasn't completely comfortable answering, I needed to work on it in therapy because that wasn't supposed to be about me. That's some kind of shame or guilt that I'm carrying. And I know that I shouldn't be, because the hallmark of sexual abuse is a lack of consent. And if you aren't consenting to this, no, you're not putting yourself in that situation or something. The only person that is responsible for that is the person who's abusing you. And I think that that can be a takeaway, certainly, for our fellow survivors who are listening. It doesn't just have to be trigger warnings on social media. And while they can be helpful, you can't just rely on them for your entire life. So if somebody is asking you something, or you're consuming something or seeing something that is triggering deep within your heart, like you're saying, Barrett, sit with it. It's scary. Sit with it. Talk about it. Write it down. Work through that, because it's not going to go away. You are going to have to learn how to live with it, or you know, get on that frontage road and skip that accident on the interstate. But
absolutely.
You have to figure out your own way through that.
In my opinion, it just feels like a way to continue to let that situation or that offender control your life. And for me, maybe I'm just too damn stubborn. I'm like, no.
You are stubborn? What? This is brand new information.
Allegedly. Well, tell me I am because I'm not. But it's a way to continue to let that situation control your life. And I'm pretty sure it was a TikTok video that I heard. And it was this beautiful analogy. I love a good analogy. It was this beautiful analogy of someone who was saying buffaloes, whenever they are out on the plains and they see rain coming, they run straight towards the rain because buffaloes hate getting wet. And so they've learned that if they try to outrun the rain, it will eventually catch them. However, if they run straight towards the rain, they get through it faster and they're in the storm less time. And I just thought, wow, that is a beautiful analogy for life. And when we're up against these things that are difficult, we can either run from it and eventually it's going to freaking catch us, or we can face it head on. Isn't it great, Kim? Have I not told you this?
No. And now I'm over here like, run, Ralphie, run into the storm.
I love it.
Oh my gosh.
I love it. I've never heard that before.
Hi. That's right.
I've applied it to a lot of different things in my life. I'm like, okay, like when you have hard things, like just face it head on.
Yes. 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 And the other thing that I want to add is just, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, real life is not going to have trigger warnings for you. You're not going to be out in a situation and all of a sudden someone's like, pause, this may upset you. And then it happens, you know? And so I think that there are reasons why people have them. They do help certain people for certain things. And like, again, it is constantly figuring out how we can be as inclusive and as mindful and heal together as much as possible. But yeah, I think it's an interesting conversation for sure. And yes, yes,
yes.
Run towards the rain, run through the rain.
It is controversial. And I agree with you completely. It's like, there's a reason. And I understand that some people need it at some point, but you can't rely on it forever. Because like you said, life is not going to hold trigger warnings. And I instantly, during all of these conversations, had Kim in mind. And, you know, one of Kim's big triggers was, and I'm speaking for her because I know she has spoken about this quite frequently, but it was a certain tone of light that came through her window. So it was early morning light coming through her window. It's like, could you imagine if Kim had not faced that trigger and she needed trigger warning? Like, there's just so many varieties of triggers that occur because of trauma. And so I think it's just so important that we take some personal responsibility for our healing and our triggers. And that's across the board, right? Like, that is for, you know, smashing the patriarchy, and that is for healing your trauma, right? Like, we have to take control of our triggers and our healing, because nobody else is going to do it for us.
Yes. Amen. Amen. We all have work to do. We all have work to do.
So speaking of work to do, I want you to talk about your catchphrase that I saw on your website. And I know you've talked about before, but tell us about Hike Your Own Hike.
Yes. So Hike Your Own Hike is actually tattooed on my arm.
Love it.
And it's in my own handwriting, because I figured that's the most hiking your own hike you could do. And it was a phrase that I first heard when I decided to do another big change in my life. I do this every couple of years. I'm like, okay, let's just fuck everything up and go have an adventure. So in 2016, I was going through a breakup, which is kind of the big jumping point for a lot of my life shifts. And my best friend, since I was young, we had talked about doing the Pacific Crest Trail. It's a big hike that goes from the border of Mexico and the U.S. to Canada and the U.S. And so in 2016, she's like, I'm going. I was like, I can't go. I got life in New York City. I got work. And then 2 weeks before, I was like, fuck it, I'm coming.
Yes.
So we went out there and hiked from the border of Mexico up to Mount Whitney. It's about 800 miles. And on the hike, you have the most healing experience, because you don't see yourself on a daily basis in a mirror. You are disgusting. You don't take a shower. You are smelly. You have everything that you own in a backpack. And you are just walking up and down mountains all day, every day, from when sunrise comes to sunset. And on the trail, there's a saying, it's pretty common in through hiking in general, but it's hike your own hike. And, you know, I heard it, people say it to each other, and I was like, that's nice. You hike your own hike too. And then one day I was hiking with our little hiker family that we collected out there. And they all wanted to stop. And I was just like in a flow. And I was like, I want to keep going. And it was in that moment that I went, hike your own hike, Barrett. And it gives me chills and like gets me a little emotional again. I'm very emotional all the time. And I just realized that like, you have to take care of you. You have to do what you need to do. And that the people on your hike will catch up to you if it's meant to be. Or maybe you're going to hike forward and meet some new people along the way. But if you're not hiking your own hike, you're not in control of your own life. And that was something that I realized for a very long time I was not. And it's one of the most important things I've ever heard. And I say it to other people. And as you saw, it's tattooed on my arm. So sometimes I just throw up my arm and like say it to people with that. Mm-hmm. And I hope that in this moment, you remember to hike your own hike. And that even if you think you are, please just stop and take a breath and think about the people in your life and how they may be influencing that hike in positive and maybe not so positive ways. Because we often, I think, fall into patterns, especially in relationships. And what I have found, especially women with men, where we have not actually even given the privilege to be in control of our own hike. And it's scary to take control of that, but it's the most important thing that you can ever do.
That's beautiful. I love it. So some people hike 800 miles when they have a breakup. Meanwhile, I would just cut myself bangs. So, okay.
I
mean,
I died, to make you feel a little bit better, I dyed my hair blue when we were on the hike. Cause you get to towns. And so like we got to this one town and I was like, I need blue hair. I'm going blue. I mean, other ones I've shaved my head. Like, no, I still do the hair thing too, but yes, I will often do a big adventure. Yeah. And the cool thing about that is, you know, I think a lot of people are like, well, I could never do that. The youngest person my year was, I think like 16 or 17. And the oldest was 71. And you meet people who hike the whole thing. So they're going like, I think it's around 2,400 miles. I did a third. So I hit about 800 miles, 1200 kilometers. And our original plan was 650, but we were like, no, we want to keep going. And my plan is to finish the full thing and be a myth. Myth is multiple year through hiker. So I will eventually do the other two thirds that I have not done yet.
How long did that part take you for the 800 miles?
I was in the woods for 45 days, well, the desert technically. Yeah. And wow. It was 2016. So there was a really bad drought in California. Five people died the year I did it. Like, it's real survival. It's not like, you know, glamorous and beautiful. It's rough. And you have, again, breakdowns to breakthroughs where you're standing in the middle of nature looking at this insane view. And you're like, no one will see this view except if they've done this hike. And I am talking to myself because you end up alone a lot of it, you know, even if you're just walking and then you meet up with people at the end of the day. And you go through every relationship you've ever had from, you know, family to romantic to otherwise. You go through every traumatic thing you've been through. You go through every joyful thing you've been through. And then you just find yourself deeply connected to nature in the most healing way. I really wish everyone was required to do at least a week to 2 weeks out in nature because I think it would make us a lot healthier and connect back to our planet.
You know,
I'm intense.
Yeah. Well, I love it. It reminds me of a conversation that I've had with a friend. And she said, we live in this world right now where we don't have to sit in anything uncomfortable. We can just be distracted. And something like that, you don't have distractions. I mean, yeah, you have this beautiful, like stunning vista in front of you, but then you also just have yourself to keep you company. And so I think there is something to be said about how healing it can be to just sit with our own thoughts sometimes, also uncomfortable and painful. But I would venture to say that that is a big part of what is healing about that is, you know, spending 8 hours a day walking by yourself, right? And you have to think about the heart.
I mean, you have to, and it's a mind, body, soul experience. So like everything is kind of hard at once. And that's why everyone out there has a moment of like a breakdown where you cry, you release, you get it out. And then you have a moment of being like, okay, like there's only forward. It's so metaphorical because if you turn around, you're still walking the same amount to get back to where you were. So like, why would I not just keep going forward, you know?
Right.
And then the other thing that was like really important about it was, I don't think a lot of us spend enough time by ourselves, kind of to your point about like sitting with our stuff. And one of my favorite things to really knowledge nugget, gratitude nugget, life coaching moment, we often think we're comfortable sitting in this discomfort where we're actually like uncomfortable. And the way to become truly comfortable is to go again, like through the discomfort. So that mm-hmm. was essentially the hike in every more metaphorical and physical way for me.
Yeah, I love that.
That's amazing.
So now I have a question for both of you.
Okay.
Whoa.
What's the longest you've gone in nature without technology?
Ooh. I mean, you know, it's not that long recently. I mean, I don't even know. I couldn't even tell you right now. Well, when we are in Tennessee, we don't have, but we're not like, we're still in our camper, but we don't have internet. Mm-hmm. We don't have any cell service there. So we're really roughing it. I feel like it would be something that would be incredibly helpful and healing for me. And I would love to do it. I just have to figure out what to do with these pesky children of mine.
You have husbands. They will manage for a week without you.
Let's go, Kim.
Hell yeah.
If you need any recommendations or advice, please let me know. I live to talk about the hike. It's like, it just was the most transformative thing ever in my life.
I'm thinking about this. So we went camping down by Aspen for 3 days. I loved it. There's not service for like, you have to drive an hour and a half to even get service for where we were. So I used my phone strictly for pictures. Two questions. First, what are you currently binging? Like movie, TV, book, show? What's your current binge?
So we are currently binging Harry and Meghan. Like we just started the Netflix docu-series about Harry and Meghan. And it's very interesting because you can see how toxic masculinity and patriarchy and colonialism has really done this awful thing to this family, and how Harry and Meghan together are really looking to break apart and make change in a mindful way that discusses gender, race, gender roles, all these things. And it's kind of fun because it also feels like Harry just saying a big fuck you to his dad. And then we just finished Our Universe, which, again, I love nature. It's on Netflix, and it is a docuseries that – did you see Planet Earth? It's like – it's old now, but it came out in 2006 originally, so it's almost 20 years ago, which is crazy.
No, about 10 years.
Stop 10 it. Years.
Stop it. I feel targeted.
No, 2006 to now is almost – I'm like, what year is
it? This is what I need a trigger warning for. I'm getting old.
I mean, we all are, you know, but like, what a privilege to get old. Like, what a gift. Absolutely. You know, I know we joke about it, but like, I'm being so mindful in my language with it because I'm like, I'm just perpetuating the ageism that I carry in my own brain.
Fair. That is totally fair.
I'm like constantly catching myself and being like, come on, Bear. And then I'm like, this is exhausting, but it's important. And then the other thing, so Our Universe, and that is basically like the updated version of Planet Earth. And it takes us from inside, like on a cellular level, to the universe level, and shows us how we are all truly made of like just the same like gases. It's wild. It's incredible. I keep walking around just being like, we are all just stardust. Like that is literally what we are. It is incredible. I am like vibing with it on just another level, and it's, please watch it.
Definitely.
And kid appropriate?
Totally kid appropriate. Like, I hope they play this in schools in like science class.
That's awesome.
Have you seen Island of the Sea Wolves?
No, what is that?
You haven't seen it either, Kim? This is like kid-friendly.
I'm taking notes.
Yes, the most like kid-friendly of all the docuseries. So I tried to watch Planet Earth with my kids. And then, you know, like in the first 5 minutes, the seals are like eating the penguins. And my kids are like, yes. Like they're screaming, crying. So Island of the Sea Wolves, it's Vancouver Island in British Columbia. And it's these wolves that will swim out into the ocean. And so it follows. It's very, very kid friendly. But my husband and I also were like, we want to know what happens. So it follows like these different families of animals through the four seasons on Vancouver Island. And it has eagles and marmots. And
And Will Arnett is the narrator.
It's really good. If you like.
What platform is it on? It
says it's on Netflix right now.
Netflix.
Definitely worth a watch. Okay. So because this is Survivor's Guide to True Crime, we ask all of our survivors who are on the show, do you consume true crime content?
I did for a while. And then I realized I had to take a step back because of the work that I do on a daily basis. It got to be a lot for me. Like we found ourselves sitting and watching TV, you know, at night together as like a couple. And my like cortisone levels just going like up and me being stressed. And I was like starting to cry and I was like, I don't think I can do this right now. So like out of mental health, like I don't often, but I definitely had, you know, different nuggets of time where I'm like deep in it. Like I love a murder mystery podcast or TV show. I mean, we do like Only Murders in the Building, which is not the same thing because it's not true crime.
I love that too.
And it's like a lighthearted version of it because I do love a puzzle and I love seeing it all connect. I just am currently still in the middle of a real life one. And I have a really big project with a really big media outlet that's coming up in 2023 where I am the whistleblower to a really big, important conversation that I am both nervous, but also excited is not the right word. I just know that it will create a conversation that needs to happen or continue conversations that are already happening in a big way. So buckle up, stay tuned. Everyone who knows me is going to get to know me completely next year. And that's, it makes me really grateful. It's been a long journey and the healing is still obviously going on. So yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And we cannot wait to watch it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Tell our listeners where they can find you, how they can interact. Tell us about where we can find you and how to support.
You can find me and support the work that I'm doing along with the organizations that I support at Barrett Paul. That is my name. It is across all social media and platforms. It's B-A-R-R-E-T-T-P-A-L-L. And yeah, I would love to have you come and join us in the Love Army on any platform. So you are always welcome there. It is a safe space. We are constantly learning and growing together. I am not perfect. I don't want you to show up perfect. Just come and know that you will feel something. And I think that's important.
Survivor's Guide to True Crime is hosted and executive produced by Kimberly Corbin Rourke and Kara Robinson Chamberlain. If you love what we do here, please don't forget to follow, rate, and review the show in your podcast player. It's an easy and free way to help us and help more people find the show. To learn more about the guests featured or to find resources and information discussed on the show, visit survivorsguidetotruecrime.com.
Thanks for listening.
Well, see you later.